Matthew 7:12 says, "Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets." This is a very well-known verse, even among non-Christians. It's one of the few verses I know of that even the shortened version, people understand what it means. Have you ever heard someone say, "Do unto others"? Well, just by themselves, those words don't make sense, but they're a reference to this statement by Jesus. "As you would have men to do to you, do also to them." We're familiar with this verse, and I believe we get the general sense of it, but I believe our familiarity with it is our greatest enemy to truly understanding. Likely, we've studied the Sermon on the Mount many times. How many times have you stopped to ponder this verse? And even when we do stop, it seems to me we just get to the bottom of it, and the sense we get is that Jesus is just saying, be nice to people. Go out and be nice. I want to tell you there's something far deeper here than that. Jesus makes a broad statement that governs all our interactions with other people. It is what we're going to call this morning the Christian ethic. It is a question that we need to ask before each decision that we make. It is a principle to govern how we think about the people who are around us. And it is at once an extremely lofty principle and yet an extremely practical principle for daily living. This is one of the statements that is found several times in other ancient writings, uninspired writings. And so it may be that this is not actually original with Jesus. But regardless of whether Jesus came up with this or borrowed it from someone else, here he puts divine approval to this idea. And he settles this as a fundamental premise of how we live out the law of God. We live it out by treating others how we want them to treat us. Read with me again verse 12. He says, "Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets." Whatever you want men to do to you. Our ethic, our standard, is not what other men do to us, but what we want them to do to us, what we would like for them to do to us. It is not do unto others as they do unto you, or as they have done unto you, but as you want them to do. And please understand, this is not just about preferences. It's not about do what you would prefer in a certain situation. But rather, it's doing what's fair and what's right for other people, not just for yourself. So this passage then, and I think this is an important thing to say at the beginning, is not to be taken in this way. To say, I would want them to be very blunt with me as an excuse for our rudeness. Or to say, I would want them to leave me alone if I were sick as an excuse for our laziness when they are sick. You see, that's not what Jesus is getting at. That somehow our preferences suddenly become the proper course of action. Whatever you want men to do to you means an honest consideration of the needs and the feelings of other people and behaving in a way that is consistent with what we would hope for ourselves. I believe this is a revolutionary teaching. Let me share you some reasons why I believe that's so. First of all, it is revolutionary because it assumes we'll do the best for ourselves. That's the assumption, isn't it? Whatever you want men to do to you, we want the best for ourselves. We all do. So instead of condemning us, wanting to come out ahead, Jesus simply turns that thought on its head and says, what you want so badly for yourself, you do that to other people. It turns that idea of wanting the best to want the best for others as well. In the context of husbands and wives, Paul says in Ephesians 5:28, so husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. For he who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it just as the Lord does the church. We don't hate ourselves, do we? So if the rule is, treat someone else like you treat yourself, that's a good rule. Because we're going to treat them the best then, if we're treating them like ourselves. And so Paul says, you need to love your wife like you love yourself, because she's a part of you. But you wouldn't hurt yourself, you'd nourish and cherish yourself. And so you should do the same to your wife. So if we can put others on that level, then we're already a step ahead of where the world is. The world who says, I'm the only one who's important. Now, we've gotten to the point where we say, I want what's best for me, and I want what's best for others. This is also revolutionary because Jesus here expects love for all people. I don't see any limit on Jesus' words here. He says in verse 12, therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, I cannot think of and do not know an exception to this rule. Jesus expects us to treat all people this way. All people. Everyone. It sounds odd, but it's His expectation. He wants us to treat all people like we want them to treat us. And He says at the end of the verse, verse 12, for this is the law and the prophets. This is a summation of all the teaching in the Old Testament. I want you to put your marker here, and let's go over to Matthew 22 for a moment. I'll show you a statement that's very similar to this. Matthew 22. This is Matthew 22 and verse 36. Matthew 22:36. Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? Jesus said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. Very similar idea here, isn't it? Love your neighbor as yourself. You love yourself, and so you should love your neighbor to the same degree. You should treat them the way you would like to be treated if you love them. And this is one of the commands on which the law and the prophets hang, just as we read back in Matthew 7. But who is our neighbor? You shall love your neighbor as yourself. We're talking about the scope. Is this for all people, or is it just for our neighbor? Well, Jesus was asked that question. You remember the story. It's the one that prompted Him to tell the story of the Good Samaritan. The one who was willing to stop and help someone in need, even though he was a stranger. And He says, who do you think was neighbor to that man who was beaten? Well, the neighbor was the one who showed mercy on him. Being a neighbor doesn't mean we live close to someone. Being a neighbor and loving our neighbor doesn't mean we love the people around us who we like. Being a neighbor means we're willing to meet the needs of whoever it may be that we come across. That was the Good Samaritan. And so, love your neighbor as yourself. Love all people the way you love yourself. That's revolutionary. And Jesus even says in Matthew 5 and verse 46, for if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? Jesus says, what's the virtue in that? What's the value in what's so spectacular about loving people who already love you back? Jesus expects love not just for those who love us, but for all people. And that makes His teaching and this ethic He is laying down revolutionary. And it's also revolutionary because it demands putting others first. This is the beauty of this principle. I want you to go with me to Philippians chapter 2. Philippians 2. I want you to notice what we've said so far, and that most of what we've said, the world would generally recognize. You see, the world would say, yes, we'll do the best for ourselves. And the world would say, yes, we should try to be kind to other people. We should generally be good. We should love others. But the world would then respond by saying, well, I'll love others, and I'll do for others unless it conflicts with the best for me. And if those things come into conflict, I'm always going to take what I need and what I want. This is a principle that demands putting others first.
Whatever you want men to do to you, you do to them. So he says in Philippians 2 and verse 3, let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others. Esteem others better than yourself. That's a value word. We see others as more important. We look at their problems as bigger problems. Their needs are bigger needs. Them being put out is more than me being put out. You see, we put them first. That's what Paul commands, because Paul and Jesus were teaching the same Christian ethic, the way we view others. Now, what that means is we need to have a thoughtful consideration of what other people need and want. I believe that's implied by the golden rule verse that we started with. As you would have men do to you, he says. And if that's the case, we need to be thinking about what would I want to have happen in this situation? What would be fair? What would be good? What would be best for them? It takes thought. It's not something that just naturally happens. I think it's a safe assumption that if we just act naturally, we're going to do what's best for us. But Jesus says, put others first and then act in their best interest. How can I help this person? How can I do what's best for them? That is the Christian ethic. That's all well and good. But I want to spend the majority of our time this morning applying this teaching. I think we understand it. I think it is fairly simple. But I believe it's very easy to talk in general terms and not apply this. So I want us to avoid that obstacle this morning. Practice the Christian ethic. First of all, in the home. Go with me to Colossians chapter 3. We need to practice the Christian ethic in the home. This is a place where people are. And where people are, we need to treat them as we want to be treated. Colossians 3 and verse 18 says this. Colossians 3:18, wives, submit to your own husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be bitter toward them. Husbands and wives need to practice this golden rule in their marriage. For example, Paul says there in verse 19, husbands, do not be bitter toward your wives. Would you want your wife to be bitter toward you? Would you want that? For your wife to be icy cold, to be continually angry, sniping, picking, whining? Is that what you'd want? If the answer is no, don't do that to her. Don't be bitter toward her. Wives, would you want your husband to constantly argue with everything that you say or suggest? The answer is no, don't do that to him. It's important to recognize, though, how the golden rule really needs to be applied in the home. It's not this kind of thing. Well, I would really like for my wife to go out with all her friends until all hours of the night and do what she wanted, so I get to do that. It's not an excuse for us to somehow foist our desires onto our mate and blame them. The golden rule is not an excuse to prop up our selfish desires. Would we want our mate to acknowledge our work done for the home? To tell them, to tell us that they appreciate us, to help us when we're overloaded, to make sacrifices for the good of the family? If we want that, then we need to do that. And instead of just sitting back and thinking, why isn't someone doing this for me? Jesus' teaching here prompts us to do for others what we would want them to do for us. And so, we in the home can work together to meet the needs each other has. In fact, I believe husbands and wives are put together for that very purpose, because they both meet needs the other could not meet in any other way.
So if we're not focused on meeting the needs of one another, but we're focused on meeting our own needs, then we're going to miss that completely. And the whole will be divided into selfish people who are bickering and complaining at one another. And eventually that house divided will not stand. We need this teaching, we need this idea in our homes to care about one another and to do what the other needs, what we would have them do to us. 1 Peter 3:7 tells us, "Husbands, likewise, dwell with them," speaking of wives, "with understanding, giving honor to the wife, as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered." Peter uses an interesting phrase in the beginning of this verse. It is this phrase, "dwell with them with understanding." There is understanding that needs to go on between husband and wife. It means we need to be thinking about our mate's perspective and needs and the best way to do what love demands for them. So instead of viewing our mate as someone who's just there to make us happy, we need to view our mate as someone who we need to treat in the best way. You see the difference? It's not about us, it's about them. He who loves his wife, remember, loves himself. All manner of situations could be presented in the home, but we need to think seriously as husbands and wives. Am I trying to use this person to get what I need? Or am I treating them the way I would hope they want to treat me? And that also goes, by the way, for children. You're here in Colossians 3. Let's look in verse 21. Verse 20. "Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged." Doesn't this imply the parents need to be thinking about the perspective of their children? Do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. There are ways that parents can treat children that will cause them to become discouraged, that will provoke them. Doesn't that imply that our children deserve consistency and fairness and love even when they are disciplined? If we were in their shoes and such discipline was coming to us and that would provoke us wrath, can it be right for us to go ahead and do it anyway? You see, the Christian ethic demands that we don't go down that path if we feel we wouldn't want it done to us. Now, let me be clear. That doesn't mean that the home gets to be ruled by the children and whatever the children would like, that's what's done. But we need to treat children in a way that we would hope to be treated were those roles reversed, with the fairness and the consistency that that relationship deserves. So practice the Christian ethic in the home. Practice the Christian ethic on the job. Look at verse 22 here, Colossians 3. "Bondservants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in sincerity of heart, fearing God. And whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. But he who does wrong will be repaid for what he has done, and there is no partiality. Masters, give your bondservants what is just and fair, knowing that you also have a master in heaven." On both sides of the job question, we need this do unto others mentality. Now, I understand that there is a difference between slavery and employment, and I understand that very well. I understand that a slave could not walk away from a job. I understand that. But don't we have principles here that would help us if we were to apply them in a situation where we are under someone and submitting to someone? Would you want you as an employee? Would you want to depend on you? Would you trust you? If you were the boss, would you want an employee that was constantly causing trouble and complaining? An employee that was lazy and unproductive? Would you want that kind of employee? I wouldn't want that kind of employee. So if you wouldn't want that, can you really be that kind of employee? Isn't that a way you're violating the Christian ethic? We would all want an employee that was honest and fair and trustworthy and hardworking. And if we want that for ourselves, how can we not be that kind of employee? As employers, those who are over people, we have a few here. Would you want you as a boss? If you were demanding and unfair and harsh, the world says you need to walk over whoever you have to walk over, treat people however you have to treat them to get what you want. That's not what Jesus says. So are you treating people the way you would hope you'd be treated were you in their shoes? Somehow it seems to me when money gets involved, the idea of ethics just sort of goes out the window. But we can't stop being Christians just because we're at work. We need to think about others, even when we're on the job. And we need to practice the Christian ethic there. Practice the Christian ethic with your friends. What kind of friend are you? We all want to have good friends, but do we want to be good friends? In Proverbs 18:24, we read, "A man who has friends must himself be friendly. But there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." We want friends who are faithful and dependable, who are going to be there, who genuinely care. Are we that kind of friend to them? We want that. Can we afford not to be that? We want friends who stick closer than a brother, as we've said. So are we the kind of friends that leave whenever trouble comes? That yawn and groan and complain about having to talk to someone when they're in a difficulty? We want friends we can trust to keep a secret. Friends we can trust to tell the truth. So are we those kind of friends? We want friends, I hope, who will tell us hard truths about ourselves if they're important. Will we tell others if that's our desire from them? We want friends who won't talk about us behind our back so that we talk about them. You see the point? We can be the kind of friend we expect others to be, or we can somehow think they're a good friend to me, but I'm not a good friend to them. When we make mistakes, we want friends who will be understanding and give us second chances. So do we give them second chances when they make mistakes? Practice the Christian ethic not just with your friends, practice it with your enemies. There are people who, despite our best efforts, we just don't get along with. And they insist on being our enemies, and they oppose us, and they oppose what we stand for, and yet we still have to treat them the way Jesus tells us to treat them. As we would have them do to us, we need to do to them. Jesus says this in Matthew 5, verse 44, "But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you." Jesus still tells us to love them. And remember, Jesus wants us to love all people. That's not just a feeling of, I just really like everybody. We're not going to like our enemies in that sense. They're doing things that are the exact opposite of what we like. But we can still love them. And by loving them, what is meant is we treat them in the way that is best for them. Do you practice this verse? Don't we still want our enemies to do good to us? Even if we're not what we should be, we're sometimes mean to them, make mistakes in life. We want them to pray for us and to bless us. So if we want that from our enemies, do we do what this says and treat them the way we want them to treat us? Often we think that the fact that they do wrong somehow throws this whole idea out the window. Well, they were mean to me, so I don't have to treat them this way. It's just not so. Jesus says here very plainly, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, pray for them. We don't want our enemies to work to hurt us or to slander us. So do we slander them? Do we gossip about them? Spread rumors about them? We want our enemies to think the best of us, not the worst. So do we think the best of them and not the worst? It's sad that we have to have enemies. But the fact that some people are mean doesn't mean that we're exempt from treating them the way we want to be treated. So practice the Christian ethic in those relationships as well. And finally, practice the Christian ethic with your brethren. We need to treat our brethren the way we'd like to be treated. Sometimes, amazingly, in the Lord's body, there are behaviors we exhibit that we would never, never want other people to do to us. There are petty disputes brethren pick with one another that soon escalate. Some Christians nurse grudges against others. Some brethren take offense at things that weren't intended to be offensive. Some attribute evil motives to others. As soon as they hear that, they assume the worst about their brethren, assume everyone has an agenda. Would we want other people to treat us like that? Would we want others to think the worst about everything we did or said? Then how can we do that to them? Do we want others to pick fights with us? Do we want others to harbor resentment against us? And if we don't, how can we do that to them? Go with me to 1 Corinthians 13. This is verse 4. 1 Corinthians 13 and 4 says, "Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself, is not puffed up." He says here that love suffers long. And we want other people to suffer long with us in our foibles. And what that means is that we have to then suffer long with them. We need patience if we love others. And if there is love in a local church, there will be patience, as sometimes we don't see eye to eye and don't live as we should. In verse 5 it says, "Love does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil." So we must not be rude or seek our own. Or especially that last phrase, it says, "thinks no evil." And the sense of that is, we're not going to assume the worst about our brethren. We're not going to take a situation always the wrong way. We're going to think the best about them. We're going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Look at verse 7. Verse 7 says, "Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things." Love continues to believe the best about people. We would want others to do that with us. We know we've made mistakes in the past. We know we have done things we regret in the past. How do we want others to treat us about that? We want them to forgive us, don't we? We want them to overlook that. We want them to say, "Well, Jacob's a different man now." And if we want that, how can we not do that for others? How is that fair? Go with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 12. 1 Corinthians 12, back a page. This is verse 24. It says, "But our presentable parts have no need, but God composed the body, having given greater honor to that part which lacks it, that there should be no schism in the body, but that the members should have the same care for one another. And if one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. For if one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it." We want others in the body to care for us. We have to care for them. We can't simply take and take and take from the church and not give. If we want them to care, we have to care. You see, if we want that, we have to do it. "As you would have men do to you, do also to them." The same care, Paul says, will unite us. If one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. If you want others to suffer with you, you need to suffer with them. If you want others to rejoice with you, you need to rejoice with them. Sometimes I feel we are far too selfish in this respect. We want all the praise or we want all the sorrow, but when someone else is suffering with a problem, we just don't have time for that. As you would have them do to you. Do to them. If a brother in the church had a problem or a disagreement with us, we would want them to come to us instead of stewing about it or instead of spreading it around. So, shouldn't we do the same with them? We could continue, and honestly, I've had to limit this to a great degree for time's sake. But I hope you see the point. The point is very simple. We have a short verse that we can gloss over that truly is as deep as we can possibly imagine. And if we can apply and live this verse to all people, then we can live the ethic Jesus laid down. I hope that you'll take a minute and think seriously about how you treat others and whether your treatment of others passes the test Jesus laid down. And if you have a question about something I haven't talked about whether or how this ethic applies, put it to this test. Would I want someone to do this to me? If the answer is no, don't do it. But if the answer is yes, then do to them what you would have them do to you. Might be someone here this morning who has not yet obeyed the gospel of Christ. We hope that you'll see the wonderful wisdom and the words of Jesus, the wonderful life that He has set aside for His followers, that He has revealed to us through His Word, His expectations, and that Christians truly are called to a higher standard as we live on this earth. And we hope that you'll accept that call, the gospel call, that brings salvation from sin and ultimately a home in heaven, as we've sung about today. If you are ready to take that step toward the Lord, to leave behind sin, to be buried with Christ in baptism and have your sins washed away, He'll add you this day to His body. You can become a child of God today. Are you ready to come? Please come now as we stand and sing. Please, please.